Okay, so I have your exams back. The mean was 60. I want to have quiet, otherwise I will stop talking. Okay, so the mean was 63.6, median 66.5. Very high mean. I expected that. It's an easy exam. A lot of you did well. There are a few exceptions, second exam will certainly be more difficult, and the grade mean would be probably lower, so just don't get too confident. Okay, just keep doing your work. So I'll now distribute this, and then we'll thank you. By the way, I put my solutions in the web. I attached it sometime early today. So please compare the solutions to what you have. If you feel that there is a sort of rewrite request that needs to be submitted, please do that, let's say, on Thursday. Wednesday we don't have any class, right? It's a whole day. Look over the next 2 days or so. Please do not make any marks on your exam, so it should be returned to me. If you are submitting it for regrade request, it should be returned as is. But you can staple a page explaining why do you think we maybe deserve a few more points. Okay, so let me distribute this. Way, who? I believe it's who. Okay, so this is my opportunity to learn. Associate some names with some faces. I don't think I will succeed every day, but now, Hong Chuan Lee. There's an incredible number of Asians in this class. I think they realize. Very few non-Asians. I'm almost borderline Asian. Because I was in Istanbul and I'm on the European side, but if you cross 1 kilometer, it's Asia. Mike. Barcelou.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Barcelou.
French title.
Yeah.
Okay. Jason. I think we have only one Jason.
Excuse me, no, this isn't mine.
This isn't
yours. So it's very similar to me.
Yeah, okay. So who is that Wei? Is that Hu or Lu? Hu. All right. That's you. Alexander. Alex. Not that Alex. This other Russian. Something else. Kirk Knapp. Okay, so Kyung Chen. Jamali Davis. Jinman Kim. Michelle Anzai. Okay, this guy has a really long Asian name. Kyung Kim Benjamin Chung, without an E. Is that a mistake?
No, that's not.
That's the way it has to be?
Yeah, that's
the way.
It's
Chen without E. All right.
Yeah.
Very good. Raymond Lee. Patrick Deegan. Christine Cabrera. Le Wang. L-E Wang. Junhan Zhu. Is it that the Asians, sometimes a lot of them don't go back home in the summer? Is that summer classes are so crowded? It's a general question. Somebody can answer perhaps. I mean, we have a lot of international students. EC has now about 33% international. One out of every three students is international. But this class has more. So I want to understand what happens in the summer. Is it the... It must be there. Yan. Two Yans. Okay. Yan is not here. Hyun Ju. Hauk Chung. Jerry Shim, Jonathan, Jaylin Sun, David Jordan. He says it's summer. as if we didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay, that's because of the section, I suppose. Zhu Yang Yao. Feiyin Liao. Jim Grohl. Zhanghui Zhu. Jun Quan Bei. Zhenxi Lu. Sam Iskerito.
Something with the left or right or something like that.
Okay. Yu Kui.
Yes.
Yu?
Yeah.
C-U-I.
Yes.
All right. Uttara Iyer. Ear or Iyer? Iyer?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yun Ho Yun. Dan Yun Han. Michael Yarber. Please pass it to Michael down the road. Brian Tenevi. Yen Ting Lin.
He is a guy called known as Elmo.
He's Elmo, yes.
Brian Dickinson. Ki Zhao.
Why Brian? Why did you pass with Brian?
Pranav Sharma.
All the way at the back.
Meng Shen Shi. Steve Brada.
Is that an ender or
friend?
Yeah. Dylan Helm. Dylan. Then we have two Dylans in this class.
Kirill Laguche.
That's another Russian sound. Right? Now I can't put faces to names. I know your face, but I have no idea what your name is. Okay, Disha Shah. Suchaya Claire de Bourgeois. Something like that. That's a long name. Did I do a good job or not?
Bourgeois.
Mei Yu Wang. Hao Zheng. Okay. Yeah. Kevin Yu. And Matthew Jung. This is Kevin Yu. This is Matthew Jung. Xi Yang. Jinyan Song. Shentai Shi. Wei Ki Kui.
So you are first.
Michael Patterson. Hao Zhu. Zhongbin Lin. Carolyn Cho.
Pass it to Carolyn.
Ye Danki.
Means to him.
Jong Nan Du.
Akash Duseja.
The other Dylans.
Okay, and the other Alex.
So I have a few leftovers. I'm going to read them quickly. A few people came. Kirk Knapp.
Raymond Lee. Yan Yan. Hao Chung. Jerry Shim. Jung Bae. Zhenji Lu. Brian Tanami. Meng Yuan. Michael Patterson. Miku Kim. Akash.
Okay. So I would say that there's lots of epsilon zeros, okay? And some people got confused about what to do with the units, you know? Are you going to give the right units or are you going to compensate for epsilon zero? In my solution, I said the first time epsilon shows up, treat this epsilon zero as just a pure number. I am putting down the result, the appropriate unit, okay? So that's one way of doing it. You're all working in MKS and your epsilon zero really stands for 1 over 36 pi times 10 to the 9. If you just look at it as a pure number that you're substituting into that equation, then please give the right units for whatever it is. If it is charge density, give the charge density. Coulomb square meter cube or Coulomb square meter square, depending whether it is a surface charge or not. Okay, and most people did this right, okay? And a lot of people didn't worry. They just gave the physical unit, and I interpreted that as being in this way. And but if you didn't put units, I took points on it. Okay, you lost points, 1 point for, or maybe in a several part problem, if you consistently didn't put units, I still took only 1 point. There are some problems in which you almost get the right result, except that your sign is off. And then it's off all the way through. I take 1, 1, 1, 1. Sign mistake, you lose 1 point. Okay? It was an easy exam, and maybe. The way you're not going to be perfect is by messing up your sign, which is like a lot of you had that situation. Other than that, in other words, if I had not taken four sign mistakes, the average would have been even higher. So most people know what is going on, okay? And making sign mistakes is normal, but you should also find ways of eliminating those sign mistakes by looking at the physical situation. Or paying attention, paying strict attention to the way you construct those equations. Either you do that or you're a little bit lazy about that, then you look at the result and adjust the sign accordingly at the end. Okay, so let me continue with lectures. There is going to be no class this week, a breather in the midst of our marathon. Okay, so Faraday wrote down a very succinct equation. Epsilon standing for what he called electromotive force equals minus ddt of psi, which is the magnetic flux. It's the integral of B after being dotted into ds, taken over an area. And the area is the area that is defined by the contour over which this electromotive force is calculated. That electromotive force is the line integral of force per unit charge going around some contour. If you have a contour, close contour, there is a spanning area. It doesn't matter exactly which area. There is an infinite number of areas that span it, but the way flux is calculated, it's not sensitive on that. So any of those areas is going to give you a flux measurement. That flux, if it's changing in time, then there is an electromotive force. Okay, so here is what Michael Faraday, around 1930s or so, started writing down. Okay, so what he wrote down is that this epsilon, which stands for electromotive force, is equal to minus ddt, time derivative of a quantity called c. All right? Now, if we dig this into this definition, what these terms are, EMF is really the line integral over a closed contour of E plus V cross B dot dl. Okay? So you always write an equation like this in a reference frame. Otherwise, it's meaningless to talk about fields. In some reference frame, you have an electric field and you have a magnetic field that goes into this EMF equation. And then there is this V. That V is the speed, actually velocity since it's a vector, of the contour that is over which you are calculating the EMF. Now, in many situations, that contour is stationary in the lab frame, and then there is no V. It's then it's just an E dot dl, okay? But that contour may be actually a physical wire that is moving in the lab frame. Then it has a velocity. That V is the velocity of that. Actually, the velocity of the contour that is moving in the lab could be dependent on the positions on the contour, okay? You might have some sort of a rectangular contour. As it is moving with different speeds at different, because it's being stretched. If it's deforming, there's actually a different velocity associated with each incremental length dl. Even that is included in this equation. Even that is a possibility. Okay? So this is what Mike Faraday called EMF. Somebody is asking for a NASA meeting. Forget about it, I'm teaching class. Okay, so that's the EMF, okay? And EMF, electromotive force, but this is not a force, it's a bad name, okay? Everybody knows this is a bad name, but we still use it. Because first of all, electric field is not a force, it's force per unit charge. Second, E dot dl is an increment of work, but not work per unit charge, actually, all right? Because force times distance is work, force times distance per unit charge is what we are having here. So there is some sort of a work per unit charge that is implied by this equation. Okay? And that can be the work that is done by the field in moving charges around this loop if that loop is itself a conducting animal that has some free charges which are there to move. Okay? But it will take some energy to move that thing around because free charges usually bang into the lattice that's behind and there is some resistance to it, okay? So it is in that sense, this entire EMF works more or less like a voltage rise in a circuit that you might have with batteries and resistors. Okay, an active circuit will have a voltage source and a resistor to drive the current, okay? And you typically write, what do you write? You write source voltage, 5 volts, equals Ri, okay? One side of this equation is the voltage rise, the other side of the equation is the voltage drop. As you go around the circuit, you equate the sum of all voltage rises to all voltage drops. Well, voltage drops are typically the Ri, the Ohm's law equations, from which you, of course, solve this equation for I, okay? So in that sense, EMF, E, is the voltage rise, the equivalent of voltage rise, and it can be equated to an Ri if the pad has some resistance R and you divide epsilon by R, that gives you the current. Current in which direction? Well, that current either has to flow clockwise or counterclockwise, but the right answer is that it flows in such a way that it satisfies Lenz's law, and I will say a few more things about Lenz's law as we go on. Basically, the current flows in such a direction that it, when it creates a new magnetic field, that new magnetic field is opposing the change that is occurring in the d psi dt not being equal to zero. D psi dt not being equal to zero means that the flux is changing. If flux is changing, that's because the magnetic field is changing. Or the total sum of the magnetic field is changing if the magnetic field is itself not changing, but the thing is being stretched. In any case, flux is increasing, and the current will flow in such a way that it will oppose the change that is occurring in the flux. Okay? It tries to keep the whole system, which is our universe, is trying to keep the flux as constant as it can. That is Lenz's law. Any questions here? So this is the equation, and then what about this guy? This guy is, of course, the corresponding B dot ds. That is the, and this is taken over a surface area, and that surface area is bounded by this contour. So here's the picture. Okay. So you go in some direction and calculate the circulation. That integral gives us the EMF, and that is related to a flux calculated over a surface area that is connecting the closed contour. In, of course, also a right-handed sense, because in the calculation of this flux, we need a reference direction for area elements, and that happens to be right-handed. It is taken with ds areas pointing normal to the surface, but piercing the surface in a way that is consistent with the right-hand rule. Any questions? So this is what sort of like Michael Faraday, with little math that he has, wrote down. Okay? This whole thing with these interpretations goes hand in hand with something much more succinct that Maxwell was able to put down. That is del cross E is equal minus dv dt. This del cross E, which used to be zero in the world of static fields, is evidently not zero anymore, but it is matched by the time variation of the magnetic fields point by point in space. Okay? The cause of both sides. Okay? If del cross E is equal to zero, it is zero. Okay? But if del cross E is not equal to zero, whatever numerical value also is the numerical value of minus dv dt, and both of these animals, time change of magnetic field with a minus sign in front of, or the curl, is being provided now by time-varying current somewhere in the vicinity. If there is no time-varying current anywhere, then del cross E is equal to zero. So that's where we are. Okay? Now, this differential form of Faraday's law, which is going to be tremendously useful as we explore wave propagation issues and so forth, is a good way of looking at Faraday's law, just like sometimes frequency domain versus time domain pictures help you more or less. Okay, if you're going to look at wave motions, study wave analysis, use this one. But if you're going to apply the implications of Faraday's law to sort of power energy systems, Faraday's own original equation is the more intuitive one, because it affords pictures like the kind of pictures that we have over there. Okay, we have a contour defined by a coil, and we wonder about the flux that is linked to that coil. If that flux is changing, then we have EMF. EMF means that there is going to be current. A current, EMF divided by R, if this is a conducting kind of a wire that has some resistance, that is not completely normal. Any questions here?
Yeah. What does we refer to the speed of the electron?
Ah, yeah, that's a good point. That's a perfect point that I wanted to comment about. This V is actually the velocity by which pieces of wire or pieces of this contour is moving. Let's look at this a little bit more carefully. Suppose that there is a current. What's your name?
Lee.
Lee?
Yeah.
Lee. Suppose that actually there is an EMF, and therefore there is a current, and the current is flowing in this direction. Let's say that we envision that current to be the motion of positive charge, okay? So that is not going to contribute to this guy. That's easy to see, because if there is this V, okay, that V is parallel to dl. But V cross V is necessarily perpendicular to V, because that is what cross product means. So all of a sudden, that little thing that we have, V cross V, is perpendicular to dl, and therefore it cannot contribute whatsoever to this equation. Okay? So it is not the motion of the charge carriers within the contour that contributes that. It is actually the advective motion, the advective velocity of this piece of wire that you are moving. So pretty much, you should envision the entire thing like that picture. You see that in that picture? I imply that the whole thing is moving. Okay? That V counts. The other V doesn't. You stick it in. If you know the velocity of the electrons along the wire, stick them in. But it doesn't do you any good. That gives you zero. A good question. Okay? And then what I say is that that V that you see over there can be one V on the left-hand side. It could be another V on the right-hand side because this contour is distorted. All right? Take that into account. The law is good even in that case. For whatever reason, the flux linked by this contour is changing, then there is EMF. Okay? This is what the power industry takes advantage of. They take coils and they rotate it in regions where there is an established magnetic field. Rotating means that you have a velocity V applied, so then V cross D comes into account. And if even if there is no E, okay, so you may be in a laboratory situation where there is no electric field whatsoever, but there is a DC magnetic field because you have magnets sitting there creating magnetic field. You take a coil and you start rotating it, it's going to generate EMF and drive start driving currents. Typically, of course, if it's a closed loop, that current is just going to stay within, okay? And of course, if it is resistive, that current is going to dissipate power. It will heat up that wire. And where is that going to be coming from? It's going to be coming from whatever it takes to accelerate that wire to get into motion. Some kinetic energy will turn into heat, okay? And if you initially start rotating something, but then you don't touch it, it will slow down and stop eventually as the resistive motion is going to then stop the entire action. The current is going to go away. All right, these are the relationship. So this is why if you're going to keep generating current that doesn't go away, you have to keep turning it. You have to connect this wire to a turbine. That turbine has to derive its energy from somebody. Either somebody's going to keep cranking it, but that's too apart. You know, what you do is waterfall, and waterfall does it. Or you generate, you boil water, you make steam, and push that steam across the turbine. That's the way you do it. And but how do you boil the water? Well, you need some sort of press source, right? That source can, as I said, it can be potential energy of a waterfall, or it can be coal, energy in a coal. You burn the coal, or you have a nuclear power. You generate some flow of hot steam or something like that. You turn the turbine. You turn chemical energy, some sort of stored energy, into electrical energy. And why do we do that? Because it is easy to communicate electrical energy. With quite good efficiency, we can move it around, we can bring it all the way to our homes, and we can do stuff like this, illuminate the screen with some information here. Any questions? So that's then the sum, and here is the picture. If there is an EMF, which is this guy, which now you should think as a voltage rise, that should be equated to voltage drop over the same path. Okay, so you go around the loop, insert it, identify all the voltage drops, and identify all the voltage rises, you equate them. In a single wire in through which the flux is changing, there's a distributed voltage source, and that is the EMF. Over the very same region, there is a distributed resistance, and that is the R. And then you calculate your current as epsilon divided by R. Any questions? All right, so let's now do some examples. So this is the simplest one. So I consider a circular loop, and I consider a straight line magnetic field that is just decaying in time. All right? So you can easily calculate the flux through this guy, and then the flux is going to be changing in time simply because the magnetic field is dying away. What's that going to generate? Well, that's going to generate a current in this wire by inducing an EMF. Because the flux is dying away, this system doesn't want that flux to die away. Therefore, it is going to generate a magnetic field by running a current in which direction? In the same direction as the pointing field. That field is pointing in that direction, but it's dropping. So the system wants to keep that electric magnetic field not to drop. Therefore, it's going to generate that current. Not that that current is going to generate enough magnetic field to be able to stop the flux from going down, but that is the tendency. That the tendency is what is captured in Lenz's law, okay? And this obviates the need of putting polarity signs, which can get very confusing in doing these sorts of problems. Instead of polarity signs, you depend on Lenz's law, this rule that the universe makes sense, things are not going to blow up, the change, the new magnetic field will oppose the change in the magnetic field. Because you can imagine if the magnetic field was increasing there, okay, the system would should have a tendency to try to decrease the magnetic field. Otherwise, it gets into this instability situation that I talked about last lecture. All right, so in numbers, this is the easiest problem. Okay, so this EMF, of course, can be calculated by either side of the EMF equation. When Faraday writes this, okay, he says, well, if you want, calculate the EMF using E plus V cross B integrated. Sometimes, oftentimes, this is an easy, hard way of doing the problem, okay? The other way of calculating the EMF is just figure out your C, find its derivative, negate that, okay? Either way, you should get the same result, okay? Once you get your result, what do you do with it? You divide it by R so that you get the curve. That is usually what you want to do in the exam, as well as what you want to do in real life. Okay, you create a situation, a gizmo that generates an EMF. Maybe it's going to be time-varying EMF because you'll be changing. It will be a sort of a psi that's going to be periodic. Therefore, you're going to generate time-varying currents, AC currents, and there you have your entire electricity generation, AC generation that we depend on with at 60 hertz in this country and 50 hertz elsewhere. All right, so here's the calculation. So we calculate, in this case, we just directly go and calculate C. That's the easy thing to do. All right? And I have to obey the right-hand rule. So I look at my picture. My C is requested in whatever direction you make that to be. If you look from the top, I guess it looks counterclockwise if you look from the top. But in any case, what you do is you stick your finger, your reference, the S, should be Z pointed. Therefore, I'm going to, when I do this, have this result. And what do I mean by this result? I don't have to do any integration because my B is constant. All I need to do is take the field strength in the Z direction and multiply with the constants, with the surface area of this circle. The radius is given as, do I have numbers here? Radius is 10 meters, therefore pi 10 squared is the area. I multiply that with the Z-directed magnetic field, that is my C. That is my flux. That has time dependence, because magnetic field has time dependence. There we go. And I don't know what B0 is, but it's just a number. It doesn't matter. Any questions? So you take its time derivative, and that is going to bring minus 1 over tau downstairs. Okay, that minus 1 over tau is going to then get together with the other minus sign that is required, and it will give me this quantity. I have a positive EMF. I have a positive EMF, positive circulation for that direction that I did my calculation for. Okay, if I divide this by R, this is going to give me the current that is flowing in the same counterclockwise direction. And let's quickly check whether that flow of the current in the counterclockwise direction makes sense. I think we started the whole discussion like this. Yes, it does make sense, because if the current I is flowing in the direction of C, then it is generating magnetic fields through that is upward directed, and that is opposing the change in the flux. The flux, upward flux, is trying to decrease. I'm trying to keep it up, and that's the right direction. Mike, is this clear? All right, let's move on. That was an easy problem. The next example. Okay, in this example, I am moving a rectangular wire away in y direction. It has a y equals 2t center location, which means it's moving at 2 meters per second upwards. And there is a wire, current-carrying wire, that is providing a magnetic field. And that magnetic field is linked through this rectangle, but that linked flux is changing as a function of time because this wire, a rectangle, is moving upwards. And as it's moving upwards, it's going from regions of strong magnetic field towards weaker and weaker magnetic field, and so there's a flux change. That flux change is going to drive it's going to create an EMF, and that EMF is going to drive a current, given the resistivity of the thing. Okay, so, but I did this problem. All the math that is given is calculated assuming that the rectangle is on the positive side, okay? For the negative side, or if the rectangle was overlapping the source of, then it becomes more complicated. And where is that complication? How did I make this problem easier? I assume that the entire area is already on the upper side, so I therefore take magnetic field that is all pointing in this direction. Okay? So X cross Y is Z. The magnetic field is due to this wire. And where do I know this? This I know from my work last week, right-hand rule, right? My magnetic field is pointing in plus Z direction in the upper part, and it is pointing in minus Z direction in the lower part, okay? To avoid a complicated problem where I have partial overlap on both sides, I assume my rectangle is on the top side, and I do my flux calculation in an easy way. I want to calculate my EMF. Actually, I can calculate my EMF in two completely separate ways, and if everything works right, they should both give me the same result. What are these two ways, Kirk? Yes, that equation tells you all. Right? When the equation is right-hand side equals left-hand side, it means that it can be, the value can be calculated by using either sides. And they are totally different calculations, but they should agree. So if I'm interested in EMF, I can calculate the EMF as the line integral. Okay, and we are told that there is no electric field. It's all because of motion that there is going to be EMF in this case. In this case, we have zero electric field in the lab frame, but this wire is generating this magnetic field in our lab frame. So it's going to be either the line integral of B cross B across that particular particular rectangular loop that will give me the EMF, or alternatively, Granda. Alternatively, what? Exactly. Okay? Except with a minus sign. And it's a little bit complicated, but I do it both ways. All right, so, and here we go. So my flux is going to be the field, magnetic field. Now I go back and figure out what is my magnetic field of a line current. And I find out that it is mu naught I divided by 2 pi the distance. The distance y is now, but that distance is now going to be a variable thing because my rectangle has an extension, okay? My rectangle has a 2 meter by 2 meter dimensions. Therefore, it is going to be at any instant located between 2t for the center plus and minus 1 meter. So those are going to go into my integration limits. That is in the y direction. But in the x direction, my rectangle is not moving. And it's going from minus 1 to plus 1. So here I go then. My flux is calculated like this. It's a double integral over dx dy. In dx, I go from minus 1 to 1 meter. In dy, I go from 2t minus 1 to 2t plus 1 because it is centered around 2t the way. So at each instant, it has its center location is given by 2t, but its two extremes are 2t plus and minus 1. So that's the integration I need to do. And that's an easy integration. It actually involves, of course, a 1 over y integrations over dy gives us a natural logarithm. And when that is evaluated at these two limits, it gives me this sort of an equation. If that equation, if you push the rectangle back all the way to the y equals 0 level, that equation is going to misbehave because it has been only calculated for this the regime where the rectangle is above. You guys can go and complete the problem if you wish for the overlapping regions. Right. For instance, when the rectangle is exactly overlapping the center, there is going to be zero flux. All the positive flux on one side will be compensated by the negative flux. That will be zero flux at that point, but its derivative should not be zero because as you are moving, it's going from negative to positive flux. The problem gets complicated. It's easier to show the easier version here. Any questions here? So now that I have my flux, all I need to do, Granda, take its minus time derivative, and that gives me my time-dependent flux, which is my time-dependent EMF. If I plug in the numbers, I have the EMF. What is the EMF good for? For calculating the current, if that's what you want. Okay. In an exam situation, that's usually what it's good for. In real life, it is good for powering our appliances. The alternative calculation. Okay? Alternative calculation. What am I going to do? Well, I'm going to visit these two edges. Let's look at here. This is moving with 2 meters per second, but also moving this. This rectangle is not distorting. David, I hope you are. You should be awake. All right. So we have motion here.
and there is going to be B cross B. B is upwards, B is pointing in this direction, B cross B points in the direction of circulation at this edge. Okay? If we come here, B cross B is still the same way. B cross B. B is a little bit weaker, but it's still pointing in the same direction. B cross B still going to point in this direction, same thumb direction, but it is no longer in the direction of circulation, but it is against the circulation, as you can see, because my circulation starts going the other way, following. Okay, so when I add the, when I add all these contributions, therefore, I'm going to get a positive contribution that is coming from this side, and this will subtract. But this is faster or bigger in magnitude than this. Therefore, we're not going to go to zero, we're going to go to the exactly the right amount. Okay, that calculation better give exactly the same result, because that's what Faraday claimed, and that's what subsequent experiments always show is the case. So, and here we go. It's not a very difficult calculation, so I advise you go home and look at it. I'm simply using 2 meters per second velocity and multiplying it with the magnetic field that I'm instantaneously seeing at the bottom edge and the top edge. So I have to now replace the generic y with the y of the bottom edge and y of the top edge. That is, I have 2t minus 1 in this term and 2t plus 1 on this term. The bigger denominator of the second term makes this number to be smaller than this number. Therefore, this subtraction doesn't go to zero. It, the residue that comes out is exactly the EMF that we got the other way. Okay? So, let this be a lesson. It's sort of like magical. You can calculate the EMF in totally different ways. In one case, we take into account the velocity, etc. And in the other case, we take the magnetic field that is linking this area, and you come up with the same results, the same thing. Any questions? And of course, if the velocity were equal to zero, then the last calculation would give us zero. But then, what else would be zero? That entire time derivative of that flux would be zero, because the integration limits that allowed us to calculate the flux, which were time-dependent in the first place, would not be time-dependent. Therefore, we would just get a pure number, and its derivative would be zero, and there would be no EMF, no current. You take a wire loop, put it in the vicinity of some DC magnetic field, you don't move the wire, you don't distort it, you don't rotate it, nothing happens, there is no current. To generate current, and therefore convert whatever kinetic energy or stored chemical energy, electrical energy, you have to make this thing move or rotate or distort or something. That work then becomes the energy that is distributed. And here is a graphic example of pretty much the same thing. So this is like my earlier loop. It is this time in a constant magnetic field. The magnetic field is not decaying, but somehow I'm rotating the loop around the one of its axes. A conducting loop of radius 0.1 meter is being rotated around the x-axis. So I take this thing and just rotate it. Around and around, like this. And as I do that, the flux changes. When the whole thing rotates into being on the xz plane, there is no flux because the magnetic field is all tangential. It's missing to link it. And then you move forward, again, there is linkage. Okay, so you have to write down the time-varying linkage, take its derivative, and that's your EMF. Now, I would hate to do this problem using the B cross B version, because then it's more complicated. Obviously, you pick whatever is the easiest one. Is that well illustrated, Randa? You see that, right? Okay, so then it's a very easy problem. When you have the best, the maximum value of flux is simply the strength of this magnetic field, which is 10 teslas pointing in z direction, multiplied with the area, which is pi 0.1 squared. This is the maximum flux. Okay? Then the time-varying flux is going to be that maximum flux times the cosine omega t. At omega equal to 0, cosine of 0 is 1, you get the maximum flux, and then it diminishes. It goes through 0 at omega t equals 90 degrees, the cosine is 0, and then it goes negative and comes back. It's a periodic flux that you have. Okay? And the frequency is given as 60 hertz. That becomes 120 pi radians per second. When I substitute all that, here's my flux function. Okay? And what is the units of flux? I didn't write it there. It's Weber per meter square multiplied by meter square, so it's Webers. It's just a Weber. That amount of Weber is the flux. Now I take its minus time derivative, and that's my EMF. Straightforward. The derivative of cosine furnishes a minus sign, but that minus sign is eaten away by the other minus sign. And then that's your EMF. What do you do with it? You divide it by R. That gives you the AC current that's being pushed around. Whatever. I think R was given in that equation, so some numerical value. So that's that. So this form of Faraday's law, as you see, gives you a lot of understanding into the kind of stuff that 330 people discuss. Okay? You wouldn't see that from this sort of equation. But to make deductions about wave motions, electromagnetic waves from these equations would be very hard. So therefore, these equations are very complementary. The fact that you can go from one to the other means that ultimately both contains all the information. But there's a lot of conditions in going from one to the other without losing information. So Professor Feynman calls this the most amazing equation in science. It's an equation, but it's really not one equation. It's many equations. He counts three equations. It serves three totally different roles. But of course, these roles come to the forefront in the form that you utilize in these. Okay? I guess one form is simply this, that shows no integrals. The other form is the integral form of the equation, and it's, you know, full-blown sense. And the third equation is the curl equation. All right, so now we have one more example. And this example is really mind-boggling. I have in this example a solenoid. That solenoid, it's an infinite solenoid to make this problem idealized. Where are all the magnetic fields of the solenoid confined to?
Inside.
To the inside. Okay? Now, that of course is a DC solenoid field if the current in the solenoid is DC. But let's imagine it to be slowly changing with time. Therefore, it is no longer DC. It is something that is changing with time. Okay, so then I surround this solenoid with two resistors. I make a loop with two resistors as shown here. One of the resistors is 1 ohm, the other is 3 ohms. Okay? What is the dynamics? What's going to happen in that loop? Well, let's follow Faraday's law. That loop has an enclosed area. Is there a flux through that enclosed area?
Yeah.
It's scared though. Yes, right? And where is that flux? Inside. Is there any magnetic field at the locations of those resistors? Ideally, no. Okay? So, but what is going to be? Is there going to be current? Yes, there is going to be current because there is an EMF. That EMF is coming because of the time-varying flux inside the solenoid. Okay? So if you strictly sort of subscribe to the idea, time-varying magnetic fields locally generate time-varying electric fields based on this equation, which is a local relationship in some sense. You are mistaken. That equation is not telling you that. That equation is telling that whatever causes time-varying electric fields and magnetic fields work in such a way that at every location, the curl of E and minus dV dt match one another. It says no more than that. In this case, there is actually zero magnetic field or time variation in this. The curl of E is also equal to zero here, okay? Nevertheless, there is EMF, okay? So now let's answer the question. It's sort of like the discussion is philosophical, but the entire calculation is very easy. An infinite solenoid is producing a constant EMF
I can call minus d psi dt EMF. I can either call it the time derivative, negative of the time derivative of the flux, magnetic flux, or I can call it EMF. It's easier to say EMF. An infinite solenoid producing a constant EMF of 8 volts, and EMFs are measured in volts because they are the integrals of E dot dLs or E plus V cross V dL, but that is even always in volts. Passes through a small loop consisting of 1 ohm resistor on the right and a 3 ohm resistor on the left, connected in series. What is the current through the resistor? Blindly, you can get that. Okay? You divide the EMF by the total resistance of the loop, you have the current. So what do we have? We have 8 volts of EMF divided by 4 ohms of resistance, and you get 2 amps of current. Okay? So that loop of 2 resistors contains no battery. But in a sense, it has a distributed inner battery, which is this EMF. Okay? And this is inductive coupling. Although it looks magical, this is what transformers work. You don't have an actual wire connection, but there is a spatial connection that is through the linked magnetic fields that are associated with closed conducting paths. What about the voltage drops? If there is a 2 amp current, there is going to be across the 3 ohm resistor how much drop? 3 times 2, 6 volt drop. And then further on, that 2 amp goes through another in series 1 ohm. There is another 2 ohm, 2 amp, 1 times 1, there is a 2 volt drop. So I have a 6 volt plus 2 volt, 8 volt drops. 8 volt drop provided by 8 volt EMF. The sum of all voltage rises equals the sum of all voltage drops. That's what I was trying to tell. And then here is one example. Any questions here?
Yeah, it's easy to copy these things using flux, but how can you copy these things using E plus V cross V dot EMF?
Well, then you have to sort of like figure out what that E is there. It is complicated, okay? It is exact, there is no V here. Right?
Yeah, there's no
B. There has to be an E, but you don't do it. You just do it this way, right? Because then you say, there must be an E. I don't know how to calculate it, or it's really hard to deal with it. So, but is it right or is it wrong? You go and do the experiment. How do you do the experiment? You go in the lab and put an ammeter there and measure a current. If there is a current, then this is right. Okay, so or you can use voltmeters. But here's the big question. Suppose that I put one of the leads of the voltmeter on A, the other I put it on B. Okay, what do I measure? I measure the voltage drop across the resistor. But one of them is 2 volts, the other is 6 volts. Which one do I measure? Well, the answer is it depends where the leads are. We are in a new world. We are in the world where the potentials are no longer quite as reliable things as before. We are no longer in the world of exactly quasi, we are not even necessarily perhaps in quasi-static situations. We have to, when we say about voltages, we have to take the entire path line integral. And it is in general path dependent. We are in a world where the our means of calculating voltage, which is E dot dL integral, is path dependent. So the answer turns out to be, if the leads of the voltmeter are on this side of the solenoid, then you are going to get the voltage drop of 2 volts, plus or minus 2 volts. That is based on 2 amps going through the 1 amp resistor. If you put the leads on the other side, but it's hard to flip it to the other side. You have to first disconnect and go to the other, because this guy is infinitely large, right? So you can't do that. So you disconnect, you go and connect it on the other side. You measure this time. What is it? 2 times 3 ohms, 6 volts. And what is the difference? 8 volts, right? That difference is, or 4 volts. That difference is coming about because of the presence of this flux. That is the difference in the path integrals that you calculate both ways. Okay, in any case, although it is magical, we use this all the time, okay? I'm sure your home is full of transformers that you are using without being aware of it. This type of inductive coupling is something that we rely on. Learn more about them in EC 330. Okay, thank you. Yeah.